Thanks, Orla. Thanks very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Who's Orla? First day back. He's know that. Thanks very much, Sharon. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Thanks very much to Catherine for sitting in last week. So I arrived in today and they say, you're going swimming on Friday, which is great news. Yeah, we're heading out and about. We've been planning it since late 2019. That's how long we've been planning it. Back at the end of 2019, the first month of 2020, we said we have to get out there. And one of the things we planned to do was get out and get involved in a sea swim somewhere in Ireland. And here we are, 3 years on, 3.5 years on nearly. And we're doing it this Friday. Yes, there will be bare flesh and dry robes and hot drinks and chats. And that's going to happen on Friday. I'll tell you more about that throughout the week. But I'm really looking forward to that. And if the weather's anything like it is today, we'll be steeped. Although they tell me, the people who know, that this is the worst time of the year to get into the sea because it's at its coldest. Because if you remember from your secondary school science, water retains heat. So over the summer months, it builds up heat and that lasts throughout the winter months. And then by the time it gets to March and April, it's lost all its heat from last year's summer. And it's at its coldest, only to be reheated again, May, June, July, August, September. And so the cycle goes on. So we're hitting the sea at a very cold time, but we're up for it. We're man enough for that. 51551 on RadioRT.ie. Yeah, it felt really summery yesterday. I don't know about where you were. And the birds are singing and the swallows are back. And the lesser spotted man on gravelly footpath there, he's there as well. That's swallows there. I downloaded that Merlin Bird ID. We had Niall Hatch in on the Friday before I left. It's a great app. It's a fantastic app. And it's been put together by academics and scientists. So it's serious stuff. And you can use it anywhere. And it sort of logs what birds are there. I did it in the back garden. I did it when I was away last week as well. And then I had that notion, do you know when you're sitting around and you're idle minds and all idle hands and you're thinking to yourself, what'll I do today? And I was thinking I'd go on to the internet and get some exotic bird, you see, exotic bird and play it down and play it on the app. And it'd send those scientists mad because they go, God, there's that exotic bird in County Waterford in Ireland. Get on the phone there. But I didn't do that. That'd be very mean. Anyway, Merlin Bird ID. It's a great app and it'll tell you what birds you have in your back garden or in your vicinity or in the field beside you or wherever. We got an email from Paul Coe. He's a regular enough emailer from the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. And he said, hey, Ray, sorry I'll miss listening to your show today, which I usually catch in the mornings while feeding our 5 dogs and 5 cats in Boulder, Colorado. Instead, today, Monday, as your show airs, I'll be starting the Boston Marathon in memory of my mom, who passed away over a year ago, having fought cancer and age. She once said to me, if you're going to run a marathon, you might as well do it for something good. And so with mom's memory to push me on, I'll be running for those brave and fantastic, cheerful children out in Laura Lynn's hospice there in Dublin, having raised over 6,000 so far. It's all thanks to you and your team, gave me the idea. Started to listen to your show back in the COVID years when you were doing a Page from Your Life competition to support Laura Lynn, and indeed Paul was featured in that book. So here I am, age 56. Yes, I know you like to hear people's ages, LOL. I hope to conquer the Boston Marathon in under 4 hours. Just 6 years ago, with my children, we all ran our first ever 10K together. So for anyone out there who's wondering about taking up running, those park runs you guys have are so cool and great place to start. Eliud Kipchoge, is it? Kipchoge? Yeah. Is the current world marathon record holder and double Olympic gold champion. Eliud is looking to win this year's Boston Marathon, possibly break a course record in the oldest and greatest major marathon in the world, which dates back to 1897. And Paul says, I'll be running a couple of hours behind Eliud, like to give him a nice head start and all that. I'll be carrying an aching hamstring, but nothing will give me more pride to battle my way to the finish line for those wonderful children there in Laura Lynn. I'll be proudly donning the Irish colours. Weather is meant to be just like Ireland, Cloudy with drizzle. No, it's actually nice here. So perfect running weather. Kudos to many Americans here who've donated over 6,000 euros so far. If you wonderful listeners would love to donate, or even donate to Laura Lynn, it's www.idonate.ie, fundraiser Paul Keogh. Good luck with that, Paul. He's not listening, so I don't know why I'm saying good luck. And it's a very special Boston Marathon this year because it's the 10-year anniversary of the bombing at the end of the Boston Marathon when three people were killed. And one of them was Martin Richard. He was an 8-year-old. And I see that his friends, who were 8 at the time and now are 18, are going to run the marathon in his memory, all wearing 8 on their backs. So that's a lovely thing. And still in running news, I smiled when I heard this morning on Morning Ireland that somebody from Athletics Ireland made a mistake. And as a result, people planning to run a 10K yesterday in Phoenix Park actually ran 8.5K. And there were people, and I know it's happened to me. I ran, I think, a 10K up in Belfast once and somebody had made a mistake with the route, with the course. And it was shorter than the 10K and you think you've done a PB, a personal best. And then somebody tells you, actually, sorry. So there were people yesterday who arrived past the line and they probably had knocked, depending on how fast you were, 6 to 10, 12 minutes off your usual time for a 10K. And you're going, yes, yes. Get on to the Olympic committee. I'm coming. I'm representing Ireland in the 10,000 metres. Look at me. I'm so fast. And then they discovered that they'd been misdirected. And apologies from Athletics Ireland. Human. We're all human. We all make mistakes. But it's a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun. So, yeah. And it's terrible when you think you've achieved something or you think you have something and then somebody takes it from you. That's sort of a kick in the, you know. Yeah. Britain's Got Talent is back. I just happened upon it. I didn't know it was coming back because I wasn't paying too much attention last week. I was on the Hollyers. But Meath boy, schoolboy, Killian O'Connor was on. And he did well for himself. Magician. And here's some of the audio from Killian's appearance on Britain's Got Talent in front of Simon Cowell and Amanda Holden and others.
Hello.
Hello.
What's your name?
My name is Killian O'Connor.
Nice to meet you, Killian. How old are you and where are you from?
I'm 13 years old and I come from County Meath, Ireland.
Amazing.
Simon, think of a playing card.
Got it.
What is it?
Funny. You don't mess around, do you?
You make us cry. Oh, my God. Yeah. Wonderful.
Wow. You are unbelievably talented.
Seriously. I love him.
That absolutely freaked me out when I saw that. There's something really, really incredible about you. And I do believe in magic. And you're such an amazing performer.
Thank you.
There you go. And Bruno's the new judge, taking over from David Williams, who was a bold boy, and Alicia Dixon's in there as well, and that was Killian O'Connor. And there was this amazing guy on last night. His name was Viggo Venn. I don't know if you saw him. Norwegian, living in England, wanted to be a stand-up comedian. And he comes out and he has his socks tucked in, sorry, his slacks turned into his, tucked into his socks the other way around. It looks like he's been on a bike. He's arrived on a bike and he has the high-vis vest on and his hair is all sticking up as if he was out on a windy day. And then he does. It won't stand up to, you know, me retelling you. Go and watch it. Viggo Venn, as in Venn diagrams. And the brilliant thing about it was that Simon didn't get it at all. Anything that's slightly surreal or not, you know, just straight up the middle, Simon Cowell doesn't get when it comes to comedy. And him not getting it and Viggo being very funny just made it. So he took off the high-vis vest and underneath the high-vis vest was another one and then
one more time
he jumped around, he took off the other one, there was another one, and he did, and there was another one, and I'd say there was about 10-15 high-vis vests and all, just very funny. I was a bit disappointed though when I looked up Viggo Venn and discovered he has his own website and he's won a number of awards, comedy awards in Britain, but that's the way Britain's Got Talent has gone. They go out and find people and they go as far as Los Angeles and Japan and they get people to come and take part. That's the way it is. But you're sitting at home. It's pure entertainment. 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. September is the warmest, Ray. February is the coldest. Mid-April is grand. And woman up for the sea swim. Then you'll be grand, says Anita. Woman up. There you go. Woman up. I see Emma Watson, horror of Harry Potter fame. She's been given an interview and she says how profoundly Saturn has influenced her life. That's the planet. Yeah. This is a Saturday. She shared a post on Instagram describing how she had stepped away from her life over the past couple of years. This is 33. She began, holy moly, before 29. I hadn't even heard of a Saturn return as a concept. Let's just say that now I am well acquainted. So what? A Saturn return? What's that all about? Well, seemingly, this is the definition of a Saturn return. Every 27 to 29 years, Saturn returns, as in the planet, to the degree and sign that it was at the time that you were born. Saturn is your cosmic entryway into adulthood. It's the cosmic exit out of your current situation and into something more beautiful. Do you get that? Are you with me? Yeah. She went on to write about how she had learned to surf badly. You could say, and that might be mean, too much time on your hands. But whatever works, I've come to that conclusion late in life, that whatever works for you, and different strokes, different folks, and we all have different things, different ways of coping with being human. And that's her way of doing it. 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Talking of swallows being back, I was in a supermarket in Maynooth and they have a resident swallow there. The girl at the till told me he comes back every year. We know because he only has one leg. What? So a bird can fly on one leg. Well, yes, that's Anne and Leekslip. They just ignore him as he wanders about the tills. Great to see. Yeah, okay, he can fly on one leg, but he can't walk on one leg, can he? Does he just hop? I want to see video footage of this one-legged swallow in a supermarket in Maynooth, please. And I know we need judges for talent shows, but could they kindly remember the show is not about them, Reg? Well, you see, Reg, it is a bit about them, and they're paid large amounts of money because they're part of the show. Simon Cowell, Alicia Dixon, Bruno, Amanda Holden, they're part of the show. People tune in to see them as well. Although it just lacked the laughs. And I know David Williams was a bold boy, but I think it needs a comedian, some sort of comedian in there, which they didn't have last night. 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Do you want to count us in there, good lad? Yeah.
One, two, three. My baby don't mess around.
Outcast, hey, yeah. On RT Radio 1. The reason I play that is it's featured in Champions, which we watched over the weekend. Woody Harrelson plays on a down-on-his-luck basketball coach who's caught drink driving and has to do community service. He has to coach a basketball team called Friends and all the team members have learning difficulties. And it's one of those feel-good, you know, movies based on a true story. Woody Harrelson is brilliant and the supporting cast are brilliant as well, and it'll just cheer you up, bring a smile to your face and make you feel good about the world. So that's Champions. What were the rest of the team watching over the weekend? Thank you, Mr. Piano Player. Emily P finished Discovery Channel's Treasure Quest on Snake Island. Sounds like the title of an Indiana Jones movie, but it's real life. An elite team of treasure hunters search for clues to a vast fortune they believe are hidden on Brazil's deadly Snake Island. It's an easy watch, says Emily, for all the family, and makes her want to go out and buy a metal detector. Grace got stuck into some beef over the weekend, not on her plate, but on Netflix. It's intense from the start with a road rage altercation that rapidly spirals into something quite deranged, with bitter feuds and toxic obsessions, perfect for winding down on a Sunday night. Neil watched Beef as well, absolutely loved it. Fans of the movie Parasite will love it. I watched it as well. And highly recommended. Beef on Netflix. Ali Wong. Isn't that her name? Ali Wong. Yeah. She's a 40-year-old stand-up comedian. She's the star of it. And it's very funny. Darkly funny. And great watch. Great music as well. Niamh went to the cinema to watch Air, the movie starring Ben Affleck, Matt Damon and Viola Davis. Where they give a deep dive into how Nike managed to sign Michael Jordan in what turned out to be a game changer for the company. She found it entertaining enough, even just for the deeply nostalgic 1980s soundtrack that the movie centred itself around. 3 out of 5, she says. I haven't seen Air, but I've seen Tetris, which is sort of around the same time, same sort of thing. The internal workings of corporate America, and there's a bit of Russia in there as well. So Tetris is good. I might go and see Air. So there's what we watched over the weekend. Might be something in there for you. Thank you very much. Just got rid of the piano player there. Thank you. Good luck. Because I want to tell you about our quiz, the Who Done It quiz. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our quiz. 3 Who Done It questions on music, sport, books, politics, inventions, all sorts of things. Like all Who Done It's, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get 2. That's 2 points because it's the more difficult option. If you take a clue, you get 1 for a correct answer because it's easier. And there is a prize. You could be off to the Killarney Towers Hotel and Leisure Centre in Kerry. 2-night stay for 2 people. Breakfast each morning. 3-course meal in the Inishfallen restaurant. And complimentary drinks and live music in the O'Donoghue Public House. So whether you want to explore the beautiful landscapes of the Wild Atlantic Way or stay a little closer to home and soak up the atmosphere in Killarney Town, Killarney Towers Hotel is the ideal base. Ideal location with a sense of charm and welcome. KillarneyTowers.com. KillarneyTowers.com. Here is your qualifying question on this Monday afternoon. SpaceX is in the news today. Is the company founded by Elon Musk or Elon Tusk? So is SpaceX or even SpaceX? It's its first day back. Forgive me. So is the company founded by Elon Musk or Elon Tusk? 0818-715-925. 0818-715-925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Fantastic picture on the front of the Irish Times this morning of a 2-year-old Sphinx cat by the name of Gillian. Yesterday, Gillian took home the top prize for the best pedigree pet at a Dublin cat show. And she's pictured there looking very catty and a bit scary on the cover of the Times today. Her owner, Susan Hart, joins me on the line. How are you doing, Susan?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. But I must point out, she didn't actually get the overall best pedigree test. She got a prize in her section.
Okay.
In her division, yes.
Yes. Okay. So she didn't get the overall, because there's pedigrees and then there's pedigree pet, is there?
There's pedigrees and there's household pets and pedigree pets.
Okay.
But they're divided into different colour groups and, you know,
right.
Different varieties as such. But she did get first in her batch.
Okay, great. And she wouldn't be in the pedigree section because she has a wonky eye, is that? Did I hear that?
She has a bit of a wonky eye and a wonky tail.
Okay.
Unfortunately, she has a turn in her eye.
Yes.
And she has a defect in her tail, which is basically a kink in her tail.
Right.
So them defects would penalise her from competing in the regular.
Will you describe her outfit to our listeners for people who didn't see the picture?
Her outfit. She was wearing a hat which my mother, Pat, actually made for her.
Right.
She crocheted it. And the dress she was wearing was made by a lady in Russia who designs clothes for Sphinx.
And she got pearls on her.
I kind of go mad buying things for her.
Right.
And it's a little pearl necklace with a diamond heart on it as well, yes.
Does she enjoy getting dressed up, Susan?
You know, she seems to, yes.
Yeah.
Because she's a Sphinx cat, they need clothes constantly, you know, to keep them warm.
They've no fur, well, it's the very little fur, don't they?
They've no fur.
No fur at all, right.
They
look like they're inside out sort of thing, don't they?
Exactly, yes, they have to be protected, they've kept warm,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, Gillian would have pyjamas and all for night time. And a hot water bottle.
Great, yeah. Spoiled, so rotten.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
She's my baby, yes.
It's a brilliant picture by Tom Honan because it looks like she's looking at you and she's looking
exactly.
Like she's giving the killer eye, not the wonky eye, she's giving you the killer eye.
Well, Gillian actually look that grumpy. That's the thing about sphinxes. They're not known for their looks and their sweet expressions. You know, they kind of always look grumpy, but that's what made me love them anyway. Yes.
Now, it says that she's Spanish, and she is Spanish in that you got her from Spain, but you own her and you live in Dublin.
Yes.
And how many cats have you got?
I have 17. Between myself and my mother, I have 17.
Sorry?
17.
Yeah. No, I heard you the first time. I'm just sorry. <That's enough.
laughs> No. They're very, very addictive.
Yeah, obviously. When did you start collecting them?
Well, it was my mother always loved cats, and she got me interested as such. So then, she had a good for years. She had about 8 or 9, whatever. Yeah. But then I kind of added on a lot extra. And especially when my friend got me, introduced me to the cat show scene. And I went along to a show, and that tempted me to buy my first pedigree cat, which is a Persian called Jeffrey. And then I got really, really hooked, and yeah, bought other pedigrees. So.
And you live with your mother, do you?
I do indeed.
So there's 17 cats there.
Yeah.
What's the house like? How do you describe it?
Mad. Absolutely mad.
As mad really? As a house of cats.
Yeah,
as mad as,
exactly. But you know what? As my mother would say, we wouldn't have it any other way. The cats are our lives. You know what I mean? They're just brilliant. You know, they're great. But they're busy.
Yeah. And was there ever a dog in your life?
I had two dogs when I was living in another house, whatever. But I do love dogs.
Yeah.
And they probably would have been my passion as a teenager. But then the cats, they just took over. And they are, as I said, they're very, they're addictive.
Yeah.
And their personalities, they're brilliant. And the shows are great fun, you know,
yes,
you get
yeah.
to meet people
yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know.
And you obviously go, like, you go all out. I'm just looking at Gillian here, and you did go all out. And your mother did a great job on the hat. That's crocheted with a little two holes for the ears coming out.
Exactly, yeah. Well, the way I see it, right, is, you know, yes, Gillian's my baby. But it also provides, when the public come into it to look at the cats, do you know what I mean? It's a bit of
fun.
Yes,
a bit of
fun,
a bit of entertainment.
All,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
They think they're dying. And Gillian loves, you know, being the centre of attention.
Yeah.
She's turned into a little superstar, but yes.
Yeah. And Susan, is there a hierarchy with the 17 cats? Is there a pecking order?
Yes, Gillian thinks she's at the top of it. Yes.
Yes, and I wouldn't mess with Gillian. I'm just looking at her. I would not mess with Gillian.
Neither would I.
No.
So she rules the roost. Yes, she does.
And how does she, has she got a strut about her? Does she, you know, has she got a strut around the place?
Oh, yeah, she does, yeah.
Yeah.
And she would, if she wasn't happy, you know, maybe then, if say another cat or whatever came over, she will quite happily, you know, give him a bat with his paw, you know,
Oh,
she's real, yes, lady.
Your mother must be delighted as well with the win and the picture.
Oh, she's over the moon, yes. She adores her, absolutely adores her.
And how is your mum?
My mum is great, tired after all the show and all,
yes,
but she's brilliant,
she's
you know
great.
What I mean? Excitement building up to it.
Congratulations, you probably thought about this already, but I always suggest that you get on to Tom Honan and get the original of that and get it framed.
I have to say, I must thank Tom because he actually sent me email copies. Yeah, he's been
brilliant,
very, very
brilliant,
good. Yeah,
brilliant.
He really is brilliant.
Yeah,
so we're very happy.
She's still looking at me there. She's giving me.
That look will be embedded in your head.
It will, yes. I wake up in the middle of the night. No, Gillian, no! No! I didn't mean it.
I can frame one for you and send it to you, Ray. You'll have it.
You're okay, Susan. Thanks, Susan, congratulations again, and pass on our congrats to Gillian as well. Good luck. See
you. I will indeed.
Bye now.
Thanks,
bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
It's always great to have our next guest in studio with us, writer and illustrator Aoife Dooley. How are you doing, Aoife?
I'm great, Ray. Thanks for having me on.
So it's book number 2 in the Frankie series.
Yeah, number 2.
Yeah. So it's going to be, is there going to be more or what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I can't say it.
Can't say it. Right. Finding my voice. Always be proud of who you are. And in this, Frankie is moving into secondary school.
Yeah, so she's just starting secondary school, and it's kind of like a daunting time for anybody starting school, I think. So I wanted to show that experience and what it might be like for someone who's autistic.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just kind of school in general, I think, is just hard. But like, I think just that transition into a new one can be kind of quite difficult. So,
And just to remind people that in 2018, what age were you?
27.
You were diagnosed with autism,
mm-hmm.
As an adult, obviously. And yeah, it made sense of a lot of your experiences in school.
Oh, absolutely. It was kind of, it's like I almost got whiplash from all the things I remembered, and just everything just pieced together. It just made so much sense. And I was like, oh, that's why I done this, or that's why I wasn't good at this subject. I'm more of a visual learner.
Yeah.
And yeah, it kind of just put everything into place, I think, for me. I wish I'd known younger, I think.
So these are graphic novels, and they're not autobiographical, but you're definitely drawing a lot on your own experience.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of things that Frankie experiences throughout both of the books, like that I would have experienced myself. And yeah, I wanted to keep it as real as possible as well, because these are experiences that other kids have. So that's what I wanted to kind of put into it.
And has it helped you to make sense of your life?
Yes. And I think even writing those books helped me even more, because there was stuff that I hadn't even processed. Like, I didn't, I thought, like, you know, when you're an adult, you're kind of like, oh, I got bullied years ago, I don't need to kind of worry about that now, I'm an adult. And there was a lot of stuff that I didn't realise that I kind of carried with me throughout the years that I hadn't dealt with. So even just writing them for myself helped me, but they're actually helping other kids now as well, because they can see themselves in Frankie. Like, she means a lot to them.
And your behaviour when you were a teenager, you know, starting secondary school, it sort of made you a target, I would imagine, for bullying, did it?
Well, I think I was more of a target probably in primary school. Right. By the time I got into secondary school, I was a lot more, you know, no one's going to mess with me.
Right.
And I was so quick with the comebacks that no one ever did. So I think, yeah, I kind of went the other way.
Yeah,
I was
a
messer in secondary school.
Now, she still has her two friends.
Yep.
They are?
Sam and Rebecca. They are best friends.
Yeah. And Sam is a wheelchair user.
Yep.
Yeah. And Rebecca is black.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's lovely, like, Sam is bullied a little bit because she's red hair. She's called Ed Sheeran, and that's in the book as well. And Frankie joins a band.
Yeah.
Did you play a musical instrument yourself?
Yeah, I used to play guitar when I was younger. I haven't played in a couple of years now, but I used to play when I was younger, and I was adamant that I was going to be a rock star. That was my thing. That's what I originally wanted to be, I think, until my family had to sit me down and tell me, you know, that's probably not going to happen now. Like, so, but I played music and always tried to play with other people who played music and make bands. I was in a little band in school. We didn't play very much now, but we were in a band. So, yeah.
And what about autism and playing music? Does it help, or?
I think music in general. Well, for me, like, if I find a song that I like, I'll listen to it on repeat for, like, I don't know how long. It could be weeks, it could be months. And I didn't even know that was an autistic thing, but apparently it is. So I think it's kind of like the comfort of knowing, like, what to expect with music and kind of what, like, because there's all different genres as well. So I think, yeah, like, for me, like, I love metal music, and, you know, I don't like loud noises outside, but I think it's more in my control because I'm listening to it. So it's, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Because that's a lot around autism is that, as you say, being able to predict things and then being overstimulated by bright lights, loud noises.
Yeah.
But if you have control over them and you can press stop or pause.
There's a lot of people who would listen to the same music as me and they'd have it right the way up, and then other things outside would just trigger them. It's mad. Yeah, I think it's just a control thing and understanding that, like, the music is going to be that loud and you can turn it down if you want it.
Yeah.
You can't turn down outside life, I suppose, so...
Your books strike a chord. Like Tom loves them, 10-year-old son. His friend Juliet, who's 10 as well, she loves them. You know, you must be getting a hugely positive reaction from your readers.
Yeah, and it's quite overwhelming, to be honest with you, because I wasn't expecting such a big reaction from them. And just hearing from parents of kids who don't like reading, and they read the books and they like reading now because it's something that, like, you know, either relates to them or it's a visual book, so it's not like just a normal novel, like, they have more interest in it. And it's also a confidence thing as well for a lot of kids who haven't read a book. When they get to, like, page 100 and something, I've heard it from a few parents, they're like, look what page I'm on, like, it's such a big accomplishment. I think that's what it's all about as well. But just even hearing kids drawing more, and they have more confidence in themselves because they see someone who's like them. And I think that's amazing, you know.
I don't know if I said this to you before, but Roddy Doyle got into reading through comics.
Oh, no way, I didn't realise
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, so whatever works.
Yeah, absolutely. I was the same, actually. I used to read all the comics in the Herald newspaper.
Right.
That's how I used to grab them off my granddad before he got a chance to read the sports section.
Yeah.
When I read them.
So, Tom, do you want a review? I asked him for a review.
Oh, I hope it's a good
Tom
one.
Tom, age 10. He said 8.5 out of 10. He said, I would have given a 10 if there was a bass player in the band.
Ah, yeah, okay, fair enough.
There's no bass player in the band, he plays bass, so that was his only negative.
Oh, that's fair enough, that's fair enough.
Why is there no bass player in the band?
I don't know, they couldn't find one.
Seemingly they're hard to find bass players.
I don't know, like, yeah, there wasn't one in the school, not at that time, but maybe in the future, we don't know.
Yeah, so have you become a sort of a spokesperson, do you think, for... there isn't an autism community, but are you asked to give talks on the fact that you're diagnosed with autism as an adult?
Yeah, I am asked to give talks, and I do a lot of them, whether it's like a panel talk or just a talk in general. And I want to talk more about it because I feel like I do that, but I haven't really been doing it in the last couple of years because I've been allowing myself to process it first, because it's a lot to kind of understand. And I felt like a lot of people were asking me for advice and stuff, and I really didn't know myself. So I wanted to give the right advice, you know. So I think that, like, yeah, like I've only restarted doing it properly in the last year or two. And I find even just talking about it, it's helped, like, not only kids, but adults as well. A lot of adults who would relate to, like, things I'm saying, and they're like, I never thought about it like that. And then they'd find out that they're on the spectrum as well. So it's important, I think, to talk about it, like, as well.
Yeah.
You know?
So in processing it.
Yeah.
What do you understand about it now that you didn't understand when you got the diagnosis?
Well, it's not even more about understanding. It's more like, well, I understood the day that I found out. That was a relief. And I was kind of like, oh, okay, I'm autistic. That makes sense. And it makes sense of this, this, this and this. But then you go through like a grieving process of like how your life could have been. And, you know, oh, this is why it was this way. And I think,
if only you'd understood back then.
Yes, exactly. Aha, exactly. Right. And so basically I felt like going to counselling was a good part, like a good time to go, like during that part of it, because I didn't really fully understand my emotions or what I was feeling. And it was only after I processed everything, then I kind of felt like I really understood myself, and kind of, because there were so many things that I had done over the years to help other people feel normal and not myself. So I wasn't being myself, if that makes sense.
So you were a people pleaser?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So and you, I didn't even realise though.
It's interesting. You knew there was something different about you,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't want other people to feel uncomfortable in your company.
Yeah.
So you acted.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. And it's not like you're aware that you're acting, because I didn't know when I was not, you know what I mean? I didn't know before I was diagnosed. So it's kind of like your brain's way of protecting yourself, because you're so aware of how people react in certain situations if you say certain things. So it's kind of, yeah, it's a trial and error, I think. And it just happened naturally then.
And of course, you know, it's been said about loads of different conditions, but if you meet one person with autism, you meet one person with autism, because everybody is different.
Oh, absolutely. Like, there's no like two people I know who are the same. Like, everyone I've met so far is completely different. And I think that's, in Frankie's world, you see that as well. She's quite different as well. Yeah.
And what are the misconceptions, do you think? What do people assume about you because you have autism?
I think that, like, a lot of people think because your brain works a different way that it's the wrong way, or that the other people's way is the right way and yours is the wrong way. And I don't think it's like that at all, because it's a spectrum, and I think it's more like we all have different ways of learning. We have all different ways of thinking, and that's not a bad thing. And I wish it was viewed more that way. But then you have, like, obviously the other, like, misconceptions that, like, vaccines cause autism and all these kind of things as well. And I think it's just kind of what people see on Facebook, and without actually listening to someone who is autistic talking about their experiences, or, but, like, you know, real kind of like documents rather than kind of, you know, just a meme that they've seen. I think it's, you know, a lot of it comes from that as well. And I think a lot of people think that, like, you know, that you're not very smart sometimes. I've got that a few times where people have actually spoken slow to me, and I kind of look at them going, like, you haven't met someone on the spectrum before, have you? Like, because they just don't know how to act, and they just, yeah. So it's, yeah, it's funny. It's kind of like, there's too many to name, I think. So
Yeah. There's some lovely little quotes, and there's a song that the band do, which are called Galactic Trash.
Yeah.
Is that it? Galactic Trash. So can you remember the words of the song off the top of your head?
They had to change slightly because I couldn't say the word lame in them. So I think it's, I don't care what they say. They try to make me feel ashamed. I laugh at you for being different, or you laugh at me for, like, I laugh at you for being different, you laugh at me for being the same. I think that's what it is.
Yes.
And their lyrics I wrote actually when I was 13 because I used to write songs all the time and the guitar tabs. Now, these are the cringiest diaries you'll ever see, Ray. They will never see the light of day. Like, when I'm gone, like, the first thing that's in my will is to burn them because, like, no one can see them. But, like, I have them all written down and it was actually really interesting to go back to see how I thought and felt at that age. And it was still kind of very... like the same as when I was in college. I just felt different, and that was my way of expressing myself through music.
Were you writing that down? How were you writing it down?
The lyrics, you mean?
How you felt different? Were you saying I feel different?
Well, I wasn't saying I feel different, but in the lyrics and stuff, yeah, I would have been writing those kind of things, and I just kind of felt like a loner, like I didn't really fit in. I'd be writing down, like, you know, embarrassing things that happened, like, so I'd remember them and not to do them again.
Yeah.
But I also, like, drew loads of comics and these things. It was kind of more like, you know, a way to express myself than a diary. It wasn't like Dear Diary every night or anything like that. It was more kind of arty, I suppose.
Notes. Because some people with autism sort of mimic what they see other people doing, particularly in social settings. So they realise that maybe they don't have naturally what's required of them.
Yeah.
So they watch other people and they mimic that.
Yeah.
Was that you?
Yeah, there was a girl I remember in particular in secondary school, and we hung out in sixth year, and it was a big group of friends, and I remember she was like really cool, and I didn't even notice. It was just like unsubconscious? I wasn't conscious of what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I started dressing exactly like her to the point where she was like, what are you doing? Like, this is like my own unique style. And like, I probably would have been the same in fairness, but I just didn't realise. So there was definitely a bit of that now.
Trying to fit in.
And it was more kind of when I was in my late teens than anything else, because I think that's when it kind of became more obvious, because, you know, it was harder to fit in then, I think, than it was when I was a teenager, because I was just, I got to when I was a teenager and I had my own little group.
Yes.
But then it was like when I got older, it's like, you know, certain things,
isn't that interesting that you found a sort of a tribe, so to speak, in Goths.
Yeah.
Which suited your...
Oh, absolutely. Because I was listening to metal music when I was in primary school. I can't even remember how I got into it, because I have no older brothers and sisters. And I just think I came across, there was someone else in the schoolyard who was wearing a jumper, and I was like, I want to listen to that. Yeah. And that's how I got into it. Yeah.
And a word that we hear an awful lot of now, neurodiversity. So you, that would be you. You're neurodiverse.
Yeah.
Do you think that people... are really taking that on board, or is it just lip service? Are they just, you know, bandying that word around, or do you think that people are more accepting now?
I think it's kind of, that's a broad question, because yes and no. So like, people are trying, but like, are they trying hard enough? Probably not, like, in certain ways. But I think that only comes from like people listening to other people's experiences and really kind of listening, I think. And it's a funny one, because you'd see things changing, but like, is there more acceptance? I think so, but like, at the same time, I think we still have a very long way to go in certain circumstances, you know, that way. It's one of those things where I think the more and more people talk about it, the more people are understanding what it is. Because even 5 years ago, I didn't know what autism was myself. That's why I would never have considered myself being autistic, because I had a stereotypical view of what autism was. And now my view has completely changed, and I know there's other people around me who would be the same. So it is changing, but slowly, I think, yeah.
Are you curious about what other people, how other people think, how their brains work?
No, because I don't understand it, and I don't know if I want it, because it's too weird. It's just too weird for me. I like being logical and kind of like understanding like what's happening next. And I think some people are like so relaxed, going, "Oh, it's grand. I can't be like that. That would freak me out. I need to know what I'm doing, where I'm going, what I'm eating, like, and not even like that I have it all written down in the calendar, but I like to have my day prepared so I don't have to actually worry about anything, so I can focus on my work or focus on like other things that I'm doing.
Well, that sounds like it makes complete sense.
Yeah, it does. It does make
complete
sense.
It's a better way of approaching life.
I think so, yeah. More organised, and then you have less stress. Well, I'm telling myself that, like, but I need to be more organised. But yeah.
But when does that become a problem then? Is it when you're knocked off that sort of routine?
No, it's actually grand. Like, if I have to move something, I kind of anticipate that. So, because life, things happen. So that doesn't really bother me. But it'd be more if, like, I didn't get the done shopping time and I have no food in the house and I'm like, oh, what am I going to have for my dinner? Like, those kind of things. That'd be a stressy
thing.
But most people probably go to the shop, but I probably spend about 2 hours, like scratching my head trying to know what to make, you know?
So you did a bit of stand-up comedy and then you stepped back from it.
Mm-hmm.
Why so?
I think, well, it's the pandemic, I suppose. Like, so I was right in the middle of it. I think one of my last gigs was the day that like we went into lockdown, or like a week before or something. So I suppose working on the graphic novels, I went down that direction. And at the moment, it's just working on them and seeing how much it's helping kids. It kind of just made me realise that's kind of what I think I need to do.
And were you talking
moment,
about your autism in your stand-up?
Oh yeah, I was. Yeah, right. Yeah. I was talking about it in a way that it was more kind of taking the joke, like, and like me taking control of it, like, so be more like what people would say to you, like, so I'd be kind of like saying, you know, things not to say when you find out that like someone in your family's autistic, and I'd hold up like a big A3 board with a get well soon card on it, for example, right. Like those kind of things. Yeah. And I enjoy doing it now, but I think if I am to go back into comedy, I'd like to do a whole new thing, because I think I'm in a completely different place than I was 5 years ago, or those couple of years ago. Yes. Like, and I went through a lot as well, so I think I'm coming out of it now. I'm after processing a lot of things, so it'll be interesting to see if I go back into it, what kind of stuff like
are you tuned into, because there seems to be a lot more adults being diagnosed with autism.
That's it. It's funny, nearly every week I have someone messaging me saying like, oh, they just found out, like, and it's, yeah, that seems, and a lot of people just think, oh, well, you know, there's people and everyone's getting diagnosed now, but everyone's getting diagnosed now because people are talking about it, and that is the thing that has changed. That's a big thing that's changed, because people are more aware and they're seeing themselves in things that other people say. And it's actually, it's still nothing but good. I think it's helping people, you know.
And is there any sort of increase in the understanding of what causes autism?
Oh, I have no idea. As far as I know, it's genetic, and I definitely, in my own experience, I think that's true, because my dad definitely was never diagnosed, but I kind of like looked at him and looked at me and all the things that he did, and I was like, yeah, I think I definitely got it from his side, because we were very similar personality wise. And even my auntie just stayed with me there a couple of weeks ago, and we were in the house alone together, my partner Carol and my uncle went out, like. And I couldn't believe all the little things she was doing that were the exact same as me.
Did you say it to her?
I did. It stopped me in my tracks, because I couldn't believe how similar we were in the things we were doing. And I was like, you know, I think you're like me, because we're too similar in the thing, everything, even down to the way we eat food. Like, she was walking around the house making these noises going do 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 do, and I do the same thing, and I'd never heard her do it before. And she's like, oh yeah, I definitely am. She goes, I'm not diagnosed, but like, I know I am. So like, it's, yeah, it must be really on that side of the family where,
but like you, she has learned to cope with it, and it's,
yeah, she's a school teacher now. Right. She's in the UK, yeah. So right. I think it makes her really, I think she's into art as well, so she's really creative too. So it's,
you're into manifesting.
Manifest? Oh, I don't know.
Why are you being laughing?
I know where this is going.
I'm intrigued by it.
Oh, more daydreaming, I think, than it is manifesting.
Yeah, what do you daydream procrastinating about?
All sorts of things, to be honest with you.
But Frankie, on the big screen, you...
Oh, I did go through this little phase for a couple of weeks, where I was thinking, imagine if this actually got turned into a movie. What would the opening scene look like? And I just had in my head where, like, you see, like, for example, like the Universal logo, you know the way it comes in the world?
Yes.
Like, it's coming in, right? But then you hear, like, Slayer, Rain and Blood, but it doesn't really kick in until they're walking into the school. So that's all. I kept playing that over my head, going, that's what, if I was doing that now, and I had control over it, obviously, that's what it would look like. And I do that with stuff, because I think it's, I don't think there's anything wrong with dreaming big. It's a big crack. There's nothing wrong with dreaming big.
Yeah.
You know, I dreamed big about a lot of the things that I've accomplished now, and it seems to work. So yeah, dream big, I suppose.
What I love about this, without giving us, you know, but there's a lovely scene at the end.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's not what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
So Frankie is very understanding of what it's like to have no friends, and sometimes bullies don't have friends.
Yeah. And I actually had someone leave a review today, actually, just about this thing. And they were like, oh, well, that would never happen, kind of thing. And do you know what? I think it needs to happen more, because I think that's all most of this, like with bullying, like, you just don't, most of the time when people are being bullied, like, you're thinking about yourself and how hurt you are. And it's not to say that, like, you have to be friends with your bully, but I think that, like, a bully only bullies because they've been bullied or being bullied themselves. And I think if more people understood that as well.
I know what happened to them. Yeah, what's going on in their
that's
life.
Absolutely. Anyone,
it's difficult, though, when you're a victim of bullying.
It is difficult. But I think being the bigger person and being able to say, look, I don't appreciate the way you're treating me, but I think you can be a nicer person. Takes nothing to, it's like, you know what I mean? It takes nothing to be nice. You don't have to stoop down as low as your bully, I think. And
your speaker, that's you.
Oh, yeah.
Open up a very important window into autism in the most practical and logical way that I've ever heard. You should be giving seminars on the subject. She makes it so understandable. Brilliant, says Des. So there.
Thanks, Des.
Finding my voice, Aoife Dooley. Always be proud of who you are. And it's pre-teens.
Yeah, so
that's your audience.
Yeah, so it's around, like I'd say, from anywhere from age 8 right up to 14. Yeah. So that's kind of the age group that I've been hearing from parents. Like,
Tom's read it twice already. And
that's
he said,
amazing.
Make sure to bring that home. So there you go.
I have to make sure if I'm doing another one now, there's a basis in it.
Yeah, Aoife, great to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Ray. Great
well
to talk to
again.
You as well.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Oh, news just in. Jared Hutch has been found not guilty of the murder of David Byrne, the Kinahan gang member who was shot dead at the Regency Hotel 7 years ago. The three judges at the Special Criminal Court have delivered their verdict in the past few minutes. And there'll be more on that in Drive Time with analysis. And that's at 4:30. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Gurumaga Court, thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Connor Pope will be with us in about 15 minutes' time. He's our consumer expert, our superhero when it comes to all things consumer. If you have a question for him, Ray at RTE.ie. And if you don't get to it today, we'll get to it in the coming weeks. But right now, the Whodunit Quiz, two quizzers standing by, and there is a prize. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people in the Killarney Towers Hotel and Leisure Centre in Kerry. And you get dinner on one of the evenings in the Inishfallen restaurant and complimentary drinks and live music in the O'Donoghue Public House. Whether you want to explore the beautiful landscape of the Wild Atlantic Way or stay a little closer to home and soak up the atmosphere in Killarney, Killarney Towers Hotel is the ideal base. KillarneyTowers.com. KillarneyTowers.com. Hello, Áine Donoghue.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. You're in Wexford.
I am.
Wexford town or where?
No, a small little place called Askamore, just outside Gorey.
Askamore.
I'm not originally from here now. I'm a Sligo lady who met a Wexford man in Coppers many years ago.
Hey!
So the rest is history of this. He got me back to Wexford eventually.
What was it about him? What was it about him?
Well, now you know yourself at Coppers.
I was it road frontage?
There is a little bit of road frontage, actually. That wasn't the initial attraction, but there was road frontage.
How long did it take him to mention that?
not too long.
Not too long. So, were you Sligo town, Áine?
No, Tubbercurry in Sligo.
Oh, yeah, Tubbercurry. And it's Askamore, yeah. Is there an A
Askamore,
in the middle?
Askamore, yeah.
Askamore.
Askamore, yeah, there is, yeah.
Askamore questions, like on a quiz, that sort of thing. Askamore.
Well, I thought Tubbercurry jokes would be more.
Yeah, well, Tubbercurry
more likely than Askamore.
Yeah, I love Irish place names. They're great crack.
Yeah.
So you're on maternity leave. You have three children under the age of five.
I have
or five
three,
and under.
Yeah, we have Aidan is five, Kyla is three, and Kiva is five.
Lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're peak craziness.
How do you know? Yeah. You haven't been through this before. You don't know.
Oh, listen, it's just mental. Yeah, it's great. But yeah, it's survival mode a lot of the days.
Yeah. And what do you do? You're on maternity leave. And
yeah, I'm a radiographer.
Aha. Is there a Wexford General Hospital? No.
No, I'm actually in the IT side of things. So I left the clinical side of things there just before maternity leave. Yeah, so I'm going to the IT side of things now.
Ah, right.
So it's easier with working from home with kids, you know, yourself.
Yes,
no commuting.
The man with road frontage is a farmer.
No, he's not.
Oh,
but, he's in IT, but he grew up on a farm, and his hobby would be helping his father now on the farm. So, so I'm surrounded by animals, yeah.
Right. Can you remember what song was playing when you met in Copperface Jacks?
Oh, God. Now, it was so long ago, Ray. Now, there was no alcohol taken, of course.
No, of course,
it was so
of course,
long ago. Yeah. It was about 15 years ago now, so...
Yeah, so
I have no idea.
Too much detail there. There'll be too much detail.
Yeah.
Okay, you're up against Sean Mangan, who's in Portmarnock. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing very well.
Sound very serious. This is a man. There's a man who has his eye on the prize on you. What are you up to today, Sean?
I'm staying home from college to work from home on my thesis project.
Aha. And what do you do in college?
I'm studying architecture, so I'm in the final year.
Oh, wow. So is that a five-year course?
It is indeed.
Yeah. It's. I think it's one of the highest dropout rates, architecture.
It is a very difficult course. It's long hours and hard work. But yeah. When I've done some internships in offices, it's been very enjoyable and rewarding to be in there.
And was it always something, when I grew up, I want to be an architect? I think that was an old drama. I want to be an architect. Anyway, go on. What was it?
It was probably the thing I had the most interest in growing up. I was always drawing up my dream house, whether it was a large mansion kind of thing, with go-kart tracks inside it.
Right. Did you do anything like Dermot Bannon did? Didn't he build a house for Mr. Crow from Wanderley Wagon out of Lego?
Well, I have plenty of Lego sets, and I probably built a fair few houses.
Yes, you showed early promise. What's your final year project on?
So it is on housing, and the project space in the Cabra area for myself. And so I've just been redesigning the houses to kind of improve their energy rating and improve maybe some density in the area.
Right, okay. So it's all about sustainability and future-proofing and all that.
Exactly.
Okay. So will you be working long into the early hours tonight, or are you going to relax?
I'll probably work until 6 or 7 on it and then get into relax.
Okay, rightio. How do you relax?
Either watching some sport on the TV or playing some video games.
Right. Okay, so it's Sean Mangan versus Áine Donoghue. Three questions each. I give you the category. You tell me if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue, you get 1 point for a correct answer. Without a clue, you get two because it's more difficult. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's drawn points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Best of luck.
Okay. Áine, music. Music is the first category. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue, we'll go all in.
No clue. Okay, for two, who is this?
I just can't get over losing you. And so if I seem broken and blue, walk on by. Walk on by. Foolish pride, that's all that I have left. So let me hide.
Who's that?
Oh, God. I think that might be before my time.
Yes, you're right there, but no points for that.
Dionne Warwick.
Say again?
Dionne Warwick.
Yes, Dionne Warwick. I need them quicker the next time, but I'm going to give you 2 points for that.
Perfect.
Right, before your time, well done on you. Sean, I think they're old today. What do you want to do? Do you want a clue or not?
I'll have to match and say no clue.
Okay, for two, who is this singing?
In the avenues and alleyways.
Any idea?
I'm gonna... Tony Christie?
Yes, Tony Christie! I was saying I'll eat my hat if you get this right. Lucky I didn't say it, because I would have had to eat it. 2 points, well done. Okay, so
thank
good
you,
start.
Well
done, Mrs. Mangan there. Tony Christie it is. Right, 2-2. Second question is on actors. Áine, actors.
Okay.
What do you want to do?
No clue, please.
No clue. Okay, you have to identify this actor. Who is it for 2 points?
The interesting thing about the script, I think, it seemed to me anyway, that it was that it wasn't a predominant feature, his disability. I was just struck by, more than anything else, by his anger at the way in which he was perceived and misunderstood sometimes.
Who's that?
Oh, I have no idea.
No idea. No.
No. No idea.
Daniel Day-Lewis talking about his role in My Left Foot as Christy Brown.
Okay.
3-time Oscar winner, Daniel Day-Lewis. Okay. You still have 2 points. Sean, a chance for you to go in front. It's actors. What do you want
to
do?
I'll take a clue, please.
You'll take a clue. I don't know how much help this is, but anyway, listen carefully to this. He's married to Camille. He's married to Camille. Who is this actor? For 1 point.
I really did enjoy playing that character on Game of Thrones and being part of that, you know, just spectacular story weaving that so many people, you know, invested themselves in around the world for 7 or 8 years. But I like finishing, you know. I love the last day of a job and just taking off the cloak, yeah. And I don't just mean metaphorically, I mean literally in that case.
Who's that?
Is it Aidan Gillen?
It is Aidan Gillen, married to Camille O'Sullivan. Well done. You get a point for that. Now, this is interesting. Anya, you're on 2. Sean's on 3. So, if you go for no clue and get it right, you're on 4. Puts Sean under pressure. It'll force him to go for a no clue one if he wants to win.
So, okay.
What do you want to do?
I'll take no clue. I'll just keep going first.
Yes, yeah, so Eurovision Glory is the category. Sorry, I should have said that to you.
Okay.
Eurovision Glory is not going to change how you feel. You're still going to go with no clue. So for 2 points, Anya Donoghue, who is this? For 2 points.
Is it Niamh Kavanagh?
It is Niamh Kavanagh, yes.
Brilliant.
In Your Eyes, the winning song. In 1993, down in Mill Street, in County Cork. Now, you're on 4, Sean, you're on 3. You can go with the clue, and it would be a draw, we go to a tiebreak question, or you can go without a clue, get the 2 and win, or without the clue, Anya wins. Or without, if you don't get 2, you lose. So what do you want to do?
I'll go for the win, no clue.
Go for the win, okay. For 2 points, Eurovision Glory. Will it be your glory as well? Who is this?
I've been crying such a long time with such a lot of pain in every tear. What's another year?
Who's that?
That's Johnny Logan.
Yes, the king of the Eurovision, Johnny Logan, is the correct answer. You get the 2 points. You're on 5. Anya, 4 is a very good score, but unfortunately you're up against a good one there in Sean.
And his mother.
Who would have thought that a guy studying architect, who's obviously in his early 20s, would know Tony Christie, but he did through his mother. So there you go. That's the way it works. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup. Lovely talking to you. Enjoy the rest of your maternity leave.
You too. Thanks a million.
See you, Anya. Bye. Sean, well done.
Thank you very much.
You and a person of your choice. Your mother will be pressurising you to go along with you.
It's going to be my mother. she told me to enter the competition in the first
place. Did she? Right, okay. So you're off to Killarney Towers Hotel and Leisure Centre, and you can go to killarneytowers.com to see what's in store for you. Good luck with the project thesis, Sean. Lovely talking to you. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, we'll be speaking to Conor Pope, as we do every Monday, in a moment. But first this. Conor Pope, good afternoon.
How are you getting on?
Not too bad.
Good.
Why aren't our energy prices falling? I'm going to ask you the same question every week until it happens.
Well, I'm glad you are, Ray, because I think it's important that we keep piling on the pressure on the energy companies. Now, the one thing that I can say to you is they'll just say, oh, well, listen, we hedged our purchases of energy over a period. And like, there's only so far that argument can hold water, to be honest, because the wholesale prices of gas and oil have fallen dramatically. We had a very mild winter in Europe, which meant the stocks of oil, the stocks of diesel are at levels that are historic highs. So I think it's about time that we started to see something. Now, I'm not suggesting for a second that all the energy companies dropped their prices to where they were in 2020. I think that might be unrealistic, but if we could see a 10, 15, 20% decline in prices,
that would make a huge difference. People.
You're talking about hundreds of euros worth of savings. when spread out over the course of the year. And we've seen those price declines when it comes to petrol and diesel on garage forecourts. And I do appreciate that all of these big companies will have hedged their oil purchases and they will have bought.
And what's happening in other countries?
Well, if you talk to, funnily enough, an Irish Times reader contacted us last week, and his name was David, and he lives in Italy. He lives in Ireland, but he's from Italy. And he pointed out that there had been significant price reductions in Italy. And Italy, like Ireland, had seen the same price pressures at the start of the crisis after Ukraine was invaded by Russia. So it saw the price spikes that we witnessed. But in recent months, Italians have seen price declines. Okay. And actually, I think it'd be interesting to see, and I must check out what's happening across the European Union, because I would imagine that Ireland is something of an outlier when it comes to price falls. Now, I might be wrong on that, but based on what I think I've heard from some other countries.
Have the companies been brought in front of a Dáil committee?
No, as far as I know, they haven't.
Right. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Well, it's tricky because each company is responsible for setting its own prices.
It'd be nice for them to explain themselves in public, though.
100%. Yeah. And I'd like them all in individually to explain their prices, because it's peculiar that every company is behaving in a very similar fashion. Mm. But having said that, because it's against the law, and I'm not suggesting for a second that there's some kind of cooperation on pricing, because that is against the law and that would be cartel-like behaviour. But, you know, I think what might happen is, and you know, this kind of stuff tends to move very quickly. Once one company starts to lower prices, all of the companies will have no choice but to follow suit. And it's not just when it comes to energy prices. It's the same when it comes to retail. It's the same when it comes to groceries. So let's say if there was a company who was selling a brand of beans that every shop sold, if they dropped the price of the beans by 20 cents, within a week, all of the other companies, of the other retailers would drop the price. Because that's how the economy works.
I'll be asking you next week as well. Anyway, pricewatch at RTE.ie, pricewatch at RTE.ie. Dear Connor, I booked a flight to Portugal in April. I fell ill in mid-February, totally out of the blue, and require surgery. The surgeon says I can't fly in 2 weeks due to a risk of blood clots. I sent a letter from the surgeon to Ryanair Claims, and they said I've no right to make a claim, and basically said it's at their discretion to refuse the claim I made due to serious illness. I've emailed, tweeted, DM'd, live chatted, online app queried Ryanair, and I've got no reply as to what grounds I was refused a refund. Help.
Well, I suppose there's a couple of things to say about this. I would imagine that this is one of the most common emails I get in connection with similar mails to this person, right? That's the first thing I'd say. And secondly, Ryanair have done nothing wrong. Ryanair are adopting a policy that is adopted by virtually every single air carrier in the world, if not every single air carrier. And they sell their tickets on a no refund basis, okay? Now, this listener will say, well, I'm in a unique position because I have to get surgery and I can't travel. And I have huge sympathy for this listener. But the reality is her position isn't unique. In the sense that, let's say if Ryanair sells 1 million tickets a month, if 1% or 2%, let's say if 2% of the people who buy tickets fall ill or for some other reason can't travel, that means they would have to refund 20,000 tickets every single month.
It's a good chunk,
which would amount to 250,000 tickets every single year. And if you say, okay, well, each of those tickets is 100 euros, you're looking at 25 million euros worth of refunds a year.
When you do it like
that's
that,
one
yeah,
airline
yeah,
alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, so this is why it is so incredibly important that people listening to your show now, if they have holidays or trips abroad booked at any point in the weeks and months ahead, they take out travel insurance, because that is exactly what travel insurance is for. And we talk about it on the show once a year, sometimes twice a year, about the importance of it. But this is a perfect illustration of it, because if this particular listener had travel insurance, they would have made a claim to the travel insurer and that would have covered the cost of the flights and any accommodation or car hire that they booked. But the thing is, so many people in Ireland don't bother taking out travel insurance, if particularly when they're going on what they would consider short-haul trips. So if they're going on a jaunt to Porto, or if they're going to Paris or London or Rome or wherever it might be, they think, I won't bother with travel insurance, because I will be covered under European health insurance under a European health insurance card scheme. So I'll be covered as a European citizen in Portugal. I'll be covered in France, Italy, Spain, wherever I might go. Or indeed, if I travel
this
to the UK
medical
as an
care.
Irish citizen, I'll be covered for medical care, yeah, right? So yeah. I'll be grand. And that's the kind of mindset that people have. Uh-huh. But the reality is, according to data from multitrip.com, who would have skin in the game, let's be honest. But this is like data that they released a couple of weeks ago. 29 or 30% of all claims are made pre-travel for exactly the reason that's outlined by our listener. So a third of all claims are made either because of a bereavement or because somebody falls ill or because for some other reason they can't travel. So one in three claims happen before the trip. And that's why you should take out travel insurance before you go. And also, there's absolutely no sense in waiting. So the moment you have your trip booked, you book your travel insurance because you don't. It's not like you get a discount.
Well, how much is it? How much does it cost people?
Well, this is the other thing. It's actually incredibly good value for money, and I don't say that often when we're talking about insurance products, right? So you could, like, for instance, I have a multi-trip family policy with one of the big companies. Like, doesn't matter who they are, and I take out the policy every year. And I think it costs me around 120 euros a year. Okay. That covers me and all my family
for every trip.
For every trip for the course of a year.
Right.
Now, that's incredibly good value for money. And if you're only if you're going on more than two trips a year, well, then it makes financial sense to do that. Now, I don't know if I'm going on more than two trips a year, hopefully. But, you know, that's the reality of it. So once you buy it, you buy the annual policy and you have it for the year.
Even
you don't
if
have
you're
to
going on
it.
One trip and there's a family, you're going to get your money back.
Well, you could probably get a single trip for like 50 quid. So if you were just going on the one trip, but even if that's all you're planning to do, if you're just going to go on your summer holiday, which, let's face it, in these
hold on.
It's
120 quid for the whole family.
Exactly.
Yes,
but you could probably get a single trip policy.
Oh, I see.
For 50 quid for the whole family.
Yes, if you see what I'm saying.
Yes. And it might even be less than that.
Yeah, okay.
So the reality is that, like, it just makes so much economic sense. And it cover, and the other thing about having travel insurance, it's not just about the cancellation for in the event of a bereavement or an injury or an accident or whatever it might be. If you don't have travel insurance and you're the victim of a crime in Paris or Rome, like, the European Health Insurance Card or the medical system isn't going to intervene in that.
No.
And similarly, if you are sick and you have to be flown home by air ambulance. Now, I always thought air ambulance meant like there was a kind of an airplane in the sky that had a little red and blue light flashing.
Aww.
That's not what it means. It's it's basically a regular plane that is kitted out with the first three seats dedicated to you as an air ambulance, right? Or something very similar to that. But the European
it's
Health
expensive.
Insurance Card won't cover that.
Yeah.
And you'd have to pay for that. So it is really, really good value for money. And it's worth pointing out, to Ryanair's credit, I have dealt with them on numerous occasions about stories like this, and when it hears about stories of real grief and bereavements, it tends to step in and say, listen, we're going to give you a refund of those tickets.
Right.
And that's what it means when it says case by case at the airline's discretion. And I would say the same thing, generally speaking, about Aer Lingus, because they tend to be very good when it comes to people who have suffered real hardship contacting them. And I think by doing that on a discretionary basis, you're allowing some kind of human intervention.
Yes.
But there's no need for that if we were to take control of our own travel arrangements.
This is the first of our
insurance.
This is the first of our biannual reminders that you need travel insurance if you're
exactly.
traveling.
And make sure you buy it as soon as you book your holiday. So a lot of people, one of the other things that people do is they book their holiday for next July and they say, I'll get round to taking out the travel insurance in June.
Mm.
But there's no advantage to you in waiting until June to do it. It's not like, as I say, it costs less if you take it out closer to the day. So just take it out as soon as you book your holiday and you'll cover yourself in the event of that kind of heartache. And I have huge sympathy for this listener because it's a terrible position to be in. Because not only are you ill, your holiday's also ruined.
You're closing.
And you're out of pocket.
You're closing the stable door after the horse has bolted. But anyway,
100%,
yeah,
100%.
Yeah, yeah. But it's good advice, solid advice. Conor Pope, thanks very much. Pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. We'll talk to you next week. Conor, thank you. That's it from us. Sarah's on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.